Well, how about that one? That was a song called I Can't Tell You Why by the Eagles. Had a little bit more left there, about another half minute, but that was a pretty long song. That's a request for the She-Wolves out there on Freya's Day. This is Freya's Day. So I hope you like that song. This is the 9th of September, the 19th. No, it's the 9th month, which is September, and the 19th day. And this is Friday, Freya's Day. We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations, and most of you guys and gals got your donations in. That's real good. And I want to thank you, too. Thank you very much. That really helps us pay some of the little bills around here. Okay, and let's see, what else? Oh, that might not be the right song. And I'll tell you why. Because it came in on my computer. I was upstairs in the other section of our little two-story place here. And it came through, and then I sometimes do this. I send it down, out and down to my other computer, which is in the bunker. And sometimes it don't go through. I guess it's something to do with the router or something. So then I went back upstairs to try to find the email to get the song right, and it wasn't there either. So I went to a list of Eagles songs, and I pulled out my darts, and I threw a dart, and this is where it landed. And we'll see if my ESP is any good. I'm taking some of this brain factor stuff, and it's working pretty good. You take a couple of big teaspoons full of that every day in a glass of water, and it's said to be pretty damn good stuff. Well, I do notice a difference already on my short-term memory. And I know last night I was trying to think of someone that I hadn't thought about their name for a long time, a good friend of mine who's passed away years ago. He lived in Enon, Oklahoma. His name was Rick Norton. Rick was a buddy of mine out in California in my early days when I transferred over into the identity thing, and he was James K. Warner. Yeah, and so anyhow, that's how I got to know Rick Norton. He had a bad automobile accident, and he had a bad spleen, and so he did not live to be an old man. But one of the things I'll never forget about Rick Norton, we used to go to these gatherings, and they had that New Christian Crusade Church way back then. And it was all full of NS people and KKK people and everything, and once a year they'd have a big gathering. And like clockwork, the Jewish Defense League and Irv Rubin would come out to try to cause trouble. Well, they didn't get their trouble caused because we had some tough dudes back then. I remember a guy by the name of Winchester, and he used to go around with a tight T-shirt on and a steel World War II helmet with the SS on the side. And he just loved to fight. And here comes Irv Rubin. And boy, there goes Irv Rubin. But Rick Norton, the thing about him, we were leaving the place where the meeting was one day. And we had to stand on the sidewalk of this boulevard for a while to get across. It was a busy boulevard. And Irv Rubin showed up on the other side of the street. And Rick Norton... How was it? Wait a minute. His eyesight was not too good. And Irv Rubin came up and got close to him. And Rick Norton couldn't see too well, didn't realize who it was. But when he did, he went out after Irv Rubin was going to kill him. Rick Norton wouldn't take shit from nobody. And we've chased that Irv Rubin in the old days. We used to chase him all the time. The only time he ever got any place was when he had you so far outnumbered you didn't have a chance. And even then, many times he had to turn tail and run. Well, I got a little bit more information here on that Emmanuel Cleaver fiasco out in Kansas City. The reason I laugh all the time about him is Emmanuel Cleaver was a spitting image of Richard Pryor. He looked like him, he talked like him, and we couldn't help but laugh at him. But he's the one, when he was mayor there in Kansas City, I believe it was, and he was instrumental in shutting down our Race and Reason TV show production. But he went so far as to the FCC or whoever's in charge said, well, you can't just shut one down, no matter, because they've got total free speech on Race and Reason. So he shut the whole damn thing for the whole city of Kansas City. He shut the whole race, public access program down, which shut down everybody else in the city, including the blacks that had a lot of shows on there. He was a funny guy, and then he became congressman. Of course, if you're really stupid and dumb, they elevate you all the time. He went from mayor to congressman. I think a lot of the times it's just to get you out of town. But anyhow, some guy, Eric King, I guess his name was, threw a couple of supposedly Molotov cocktails at his office, I guess, in the last couple of weeks. And I saw the pictures, and all I saw was a little broken window and a hole about the size of a grapefruit. I didn't see any flames. I didn't see any charred walls or anything. But anyhow, they caught this guy, and he's unfortunately a product of the right wing, I'm sure. And it's a sad situation. I hate like hell to see young guys get so frustrated that they do something stupid that's actually going to give Emmanuel Cleaver great coverage, great publicity nationwide, maybe worldwide, the way they play these things up. So it absolutely works the opposite. I mean, especially when you get caught. So he's going to probably do some, you know, maybe a couple of years. I don't know. He might do 20. I don't know the way they are nowadays. But if you know any of these young guys that are anxious to chomp at the bit and think they got to do something right now, talk them out of it. Break their leg or something. But say, you're just going to give them a lot of good publicity that they love, and you're going to end up in prison. That doesn't help the struggle at all. We know you're brave. You don't have to demonstrate that to us. But just being brave can also be foolhardy. And don't let anybody around you talk you into crap either. There's plenty of things you can do to drive the enemy crazy. I can think of a whole bunch of things to drive Emmanuel Cleaver crazy, but to me, Emmanuel Cleaver is small potatoes. You know, a lot of you people think this movements and groups for the white race have been around forever, and the bulk of the white race has been racist forever. That's not true. In fact, we're just coming into the time in the last part of the last century that you can really say there is a racist movement, struggle of white people that aren't tied to something else. If you look through history, almost everything where a whole bunch of white people were involved in militant activity, it was always tied to something else. Religion. I mean, all those people that went down to the Holy Land, so-called, they were all white people. That wasn't a white racist struggle. That was a religious Christian thing. And so many times in the past, it's been race attached to something else. And that's not what we want. We don't want it today either. We don't need Christianity tied to the racist cause and struggle. So we have to go on from here that only in the last 50, 60, maybe 70 years has there been a real racist straight-out struggle, and it's always been a, pretty much a minority. And one of the reasons it holds this struggle back is all these side issues and side deals like Christianity or you name it. Republicanism, Democratism, or whatever. There's so many things they've tied to race that does not advance a racial struggle cause at all. So remember that. Only in the last 70 years has there been anything like a real, pure race struggle that's not tied in to something else and diluted by some other way of thinking. I know a bunch of the Hitler worshippers are going to come up and say, well, Germany was. No, Germany wasn't either, because Germany was primarily struggling for the Germanic race. And they didn't mind pushing the other white races around. They didn't mind killing white Russians. They bombed the hell out of the white French and the people like that all over the place. And then ultimately they got bombed. So anyhow, there's never been a real white struggle in purity until the last 70 years, but it was small groups, brave individuals, and so forth that carried it on. It wasn't a majority of people, that's for sure. Because you ask people today, what do you think about fighting for the white race? Huh? Well, what do you think about fighting the Al-Qaeda? Oh, yeah. Well, is that part of fighting for the white race? Oh, no, that racism's got nothing to do with it. The right wing today is still not a pure white racist struggle. They're carrying along capitalism behind them. They're carrying on Christianity behind them, which has technically got nothing to do with actual race. So remember that. And that's another reason why we don't want to be in the right wing. I want you to hear something that's my definition of stupid. And if you're like this guy in this movie, which is an old movie, it's from the 40s. No, it wasn't from the 40s. I think it was from the 50s. A very good movie with Tyrone Power and McLaughlin. And it's pretty good. But here is stupid. Listen to this.
My wife, she thought I may be implicated and that I needed a lawyer. That's why I went to see Mr. Mayhew. Now, he thinks he needs a lawyer, and now I have two lawyers. It's rather silly, don't you?
Well, I am a solicitor. Sir Wilfred is a barrister. Only a barrister can actually plead a case in court.
Oh, I see.
She shall not even find the ashes.
Sit down. Oh, thank you. Well, I saw in the paper that poor Mrs. French had been found dead with her head bashed in. And it also said in the papers that the police were very anxious to interview me since I'd visited Mrs. French that evening. So, well, naturally, I went along to the police station.
Did they caution you?
I don't quite know. They asked me if I'd like to make a statement and said that they'd write it down and that it might be used against me in court.
Would that be cautioning me?
Oh, well, I can't be helped now.
Well, they were very polite, and they seemed quite satisfied.
They seemed satisfied, Mr. Vole. He thinks that he made a statement, and that's the end of it. Isn't it obvious to you, Mr. Vole, that you will be regarded as the principal and logical suspect in this case? I'm very much afraid you'll be arrested.
But I've done nothing. Why should I be arrested? I mean, this is England. You don't get arrested or convicted for something you haven't done.
We try not to make a habit of it.
So there you go. Stupid is as stupid does. What did he do? They wanted to talk to him, and he went down to the police station. They wanted him to make a statement, and he made a statement. And about an hour later, the cops came and drug him away. Believe me, if you're so cowardly, you don't know your privileges, you're going to be screwed. Like we keep saying, 14:5, don't talk to them or talk about the weather or the football game or something like that. Don't ever go with them if they don't have a warrant. Don't ever let them in your house unless they've got a warrant. And don't ever talk to them about whatever they're interested in or if they ask you about somebody else. Because in talking about somebody else, they could eventually use that to come back and include you. Besides, it's none of their business about somebody else. Their famous statement will be, "Well, Mr. Metzger, we just want to clear a few things up here. We know that you had nothing to do with this, but we want to clear a few things up." Yeah. Well, old Joe Biden's chicken shit. You know that. I know that. In fact, all the politicians are chicken shit. Well, the other day, Joe Biden made the horrible, horrible mistake of using the word Shylock. And all the press all around and everybody came down on him. That's anti-Semitic. Taken from a Shakespearean play where the dirty moneylender happened to be a Jew. So what? So here is Joe Biden apologizing all over the place to the kikes for using the word Shylock. Maybe we should start using it more if it upsets them that much. You know, it's interesting how they go ape shit when somebody like Emmanuel Cleaver, the Richard Pryor lookalike, has somebody throw something through the window. They say it was a firebomb, but there was no fire. The hole in the window, like I said, was about the size of a grapefruit. And it goes worldwide, nationwide, especially every liberal progressive radio and a lot of the neocon radio talk show guys just go crazy about it. Oh man, this guy's a terrorist and all that kind of stuff. You know, it's interesting because when there was a contract put out on my life in San Diego to the Mongol Motorcycle Club that happened, it was thwarted, but it was a real thing. There was almost no press on it at all. And if there was, it was just a little bit there in San Diego. And then when I was at a Democrat County Central Committee meeting, I'd already won the primary for Congress in the 43rd District. And a nigger stood up in the meeting about halfway back in the room with a 25 automatic and tried to get a shot off at me. Of course, a stupid guy would have probably shot and maybe killed another Negro that was on the panel or any of these other white liberals. But still, he did it. It was an attempted assassination of a person who was running for office and who had actually won a campaign. There was virtually nothing in the newspaper the next day in San Diego. Nada. And from what I found out, they put him into jail and let him go the next day. That's the information I got. Can you imagine if we or you or me or anybody would do that? Stand up with a gun and try to take a shot at a political person. And then there was a time that some crazy guy took a crossbow, high-powered crossbow, and shot through the front window of my home. It went into the wall, that arrow, about 3-4 inches. And it was right above my easy chair. about a foot above my easy chair. I wasn't sitting in the chair at the time. But anyhow, there was no press on that. These investigations always get dropped. And just like Pastor Butler up there in Idaho when they bombed his church, there was no real investigation. There have been several skinheads murdered around this country by niggers and other kinds. They don't investigate. Nobody ever gets arrested. So, you know, how that makes me feel. I don't care what happens to these other people. I'm not going to waste my time taking a shot at a stupid congressman or a nigger like Richard Pryor. But someday, things are going to change. But once it starts, Katie, bar the door shut, there's a man under the bed, because it won't stop. Once it really starts, not this Mickey Mouse stuff, but once the real ball game starts, that'll give them something to write about. And the next time you run into a right winger, a Klansman, or a National Socialist, or a Hollywood Nazi, or whatever, and they say, "I would never be violent." Oh, not like those guys. I would never be violent. You tell him he's a worthless piece of shit, because no man that has any balls between his legs that is pushed to the wall won't be violent. If he won't be violent at that point with his family threatened and his community threatened, well, he doesn't deserve the title of man. So, and we got hundreds of those people in the right wing, especially. And any time the press talked to them, we would never be violent. The other side laugh at that. The FBI, all of them, they laugh at that. You know, you tell them, "I wouldn't be violent." However, isn't it interesting that most of the violence has come from people who belong to right-wing groups? Did you ever notice that? I can't think of anybody right offhand that was ever connected with me that committed any serious crime. But National Alliance, all these Johnny-come-lately outfits, the Duke followers and all that, there's been plenty of guys come out of those groups and committed violent acts. So anyhow, isn't that interesting? But when you interview them and ask them, "Oh no, we don't believe in violence. We'd never be violent." And the next week, one of their members goes out and tries to kill somebody. It's funny. It's sad, too. You know, they said that there were about 10 attempts on Morris D's life. That's crazy. That is unbelievable. I've been in a position many times to have done bad things to Morris D's, but it takes too much paperwork. And we don't want to make a martyr out of that son of a bitch. Don't make a martyr out of him. Don't want to build a great big statue in Washington, D.C. to Morris D's if somebody plugs him. Let him die a natural, hopefully painful death, please. Well, you probably thought you'd get out of it today, but you didn't. It's time to go back to class, students. So get your thinking cap on, and we'll go through all this warfare that never needed to be and got a lot of white people killed, mainly killing each other. We covered the Revolutionary War, and we covered the War of 1812. Now we'll cover the war with Mexico. Now this is a little bit more complicated when it comes to the race issue. But also remember that there's a lot of white people in Mexico. In Escondido, California, the part of the army that came up through Warner Ranch and actually met up with Kit Carson and all those guys, they were going to take this column of soldiers and march down and kick the Mexicans' asses, people who had Mexican citizenship, on their way to San Diego. So they were bivouacked up above the valley there by Escondido, California, where there now has been a monument for years, and the Klan helped construct it on the Battle of San Pascual. They started out early in the morning. It was wet and cold and rainy, or a lot of dew, and they were single file coming down into the valley. And they got strung out, but they came down the hill and ran right through the camp of the Mexicans and started killing them and everything. And they had a running battle all across the valley till they reached a place called Mule Hill. And they got on top of it. They were surrounded by the Mexicans. And they laid out their mules so they had something to hide about, hide behind to shoot. And they stood the Mexicans off for quite some time. They sent out a scout, a couple of them, try to reach San Diego for help because the Navy was in San Diego. But they didn't make it. And then they sent out another set of guys and they made it. And then the Navy gave their guys a bunch of guns and the Navy came up there and drove the Mexicans off. But the one thing I wanted to point out was the head of the Mexican Lancers was a blonde, blue-eyed, white Mexican. There was a lot of white Mexicans involved in all this. So again, we're killing white people. So anyhow, early in the 19th century, the people of the United States, and especially those of the Southwest, became interested in that part of Mexico known as Texas. The Louisiana Purchase was made in 1803. Settlers went immediately into that region along the Mississippi River. The expansionist movement then grew rapidly, as we have seen, and was the major cause of the War of 1812. American settlers pushed into Mexico and soon got control of that section now known as Texas. In other words, they're doing just the opposite of what the Mexicans are doing to us now. That's exactly what the Mexicans are doing to us, just moving on in and sitting down, okay? Where there were a few Mexicans. There weren't a lot of Mexicans in Texas at that time. These citizens of the United States went there on the assumption that Texas would someday become a part of the United States. Much of Texas was suited for raising of cotton, hence slavery was profitable. See here how the slavery and all this kind of stuff and the money making that screwed us, moved those niggers into the Southwest. That was all done by white people. And don't sit around and go on for hours and hours and hours as it was the Jews, because, yeah, sure, there were Jews around, but this was primarily white, rich adventurers wanting to do this. Not to make Texas a place for small farms and all that for white people to homestead and so forth, but to take it over and make plantations, capitalist plantations, and fill Texas up with niggers. Much of Texas was suited for the raising of cotton, hence slavery was profitable. In 1827, Mexico passed a law providing for the gradual abolition of slavery, which we have to commend Mexico for doing that. The people of Texas, interested in slavery, resented this. Well, you might as well say that they wanted niggers around, cheap labor, as did the pro-slavery factions in the United States. Sentiment in Texas for secession crystallized rapidly, and in 1836, Texas seceded from Mexico, later asking to be annexed to the United States. Well, probably here this is mainly for profit. They wanted to be attached to a country where they could have all the niggers they wanted and all the plantations they wanted. And it wasn't so much that being attached to Mexico was such a bad thing. Some of the anti-slavery groups opposed this annexation, which would increase the slave territory. In other words, increase the nigger territory. In her Constitution of 1837, Texas legalized slavery. They might as well have said, open the doors and let the niggers in, because we can make lots of money. Just like today, it doesn't change. It never changes. The plutocrats and the ultra-rich, they go for the profit over anything else. It was not until 1845 that Texas was admitted as a state. Polk of Tennessee, an ardent expansionist, in other words, they wanted to occupy and take over other people's property, was elected president by the Democrats in 1844. Manifest Destiny had then become the slogan of the Democrat Party. And this was this idea where we had a right just to go everywhere and take over everything, which might have sounded neat for a movie or something, but in reality it's led to all kinds of sadness and killing ever since all over the world. And who was doing it? Well, it was powerful white people. And that's why I keep telling you, our biggest enemy is among our own race. If we had leaders that were moral and so forth, we wouldn't have these problems. But we've always been led by criminals. I can't put it any simpler than that. Accordingly, President Tyler secured the annexation of Texas as a state just before his term of office closed in 1845, a few days before he was seceded by Polk. Well, that was, as a side issue, that was sort of stupid to allow themselves to be annexed in the United States. Texas made a bad mistake. Texas, in revolt from Mexico, claimed more territory than she had possessed while a Mexican state. In other words, she's grabbing Mexican land. Her southern boundary had then been the Nueces River, but after revolting, she laid claim down to the Rio Grande. See, another land grab. And then you wonder why people get pissed. Wonder why Santa Ana was pissed off. This area between the Nueces River and the Rio Grande was sparsely settled, but its inhabitants were Mexicans and included the Mexican settlements at the mouth of the Rio Grande. Polk did not desire war, but he was eager to acquire the disputed territory. He sent John Slidell of Louisiana as minister to Mexico to induce Mexico to accept the Rio Grande as the southern boundary of Texas rather than the Nueces River, which had been the southern boundary of Texas while a Mexican province. I bet that went over like a pile of shit. Hey, we want you to allow us to move our occupation 100 miles south. Isn't that okay? What do you think Mexico's going to say? Slidell was also instructed to buy from Mexico the territory now comprising the states of New Mexico, California, Arizona, Utah, Nevada, and part of Colorado, all of which were then part of Mexico. Mexico, however, refused to receive Slidell or consider disposing of that territory on the ground that the United States had annexed Texas, although Mexico had not acknowledged its independence. They just took it over. See, I'm not one of these white people that don't see the evils and the bad things that the white race has done and why they've done it. I'm not going to be like these Yankee Doodle dandies. I used to be that way. I used to salute the flag and all that shit. I'm a Yankee Doodle dandy, Yankee Doodle do or die. Fuck that. When Polk could not acquire this desired territory by negotiation, he ordered General Taylor to enter the Rio Grande Territory. This was done on January 13, 1846. On May 9, 1846, Polk notified the cabinet of his intention to recommend a war with Mexico within a few days, by which means he hoped to take the territory he couldn't buy. You see? I don't believe in treating people that way. I believe in making a deal that both sides can agree on. Not to wage war on somebody, occupy them and take their land. On the night, and this war was very unpopular in the United States. If you'll read more about it, there was a big anti-war movement in the United States, and they really hated Polk. On the night of May 9, 1846, news came to President Polk that on April 24, 1846, the American army had had a skirmish with Mexican forces. On May 11, 1846, President Polk sent a message to Congress stating Mexico had shed American blood upon American soil. War exists, and notwithstanding all our efforts to avoid it, exists by the act of the Mexico herself. Well, who's to say who was right and who was wrong in that skirmish, or whether they were equally wrong, or why make that a cause célèbre? And 2 days later, May 13, 1846, President Polk informed his cabinet that the United States must acquire New Mexico, California, and the surrounding Southwest Territory as a result of war. Some of the cabinet members wanted to take all of Mexico. Well, we had it one time after this war. When the Marines went into Mexico City, they couldn't find anybody to give the power back to. Everybody had fled. If we wanted Mexico, we could have had it. Luckily, we didn't take it. Secretary of State Buchanan, in a public letter, said, "Destiny beckons us to hold and civilize Mexico." Well, as long as Mexico had Spanish leadership, they were civilized probably more than the average American. More highly educated, as far as the mestizo peons and the crossbreeds and like that. That's another story. But to say they needed to civilize Mexico is a crock. Americans had often tried to incite rebellions in Mexico. Many were arrested there and shot for treason. The United States, however, had never discouraged her citizens from trying to dismember Mexico. The circumstances surrounding the outbreak of hostilities between General Taylor and the Mexicans were these. President Polk had ordered General Taylor to enter the Rio Grande River region with American troops. He was arbitrarily accepting the Rio Grande and not the Nueces River as a southern boundary of Texas. The American troops marched down to the Rio Grande opposite Matamoros, a Mexican village south of the Rio Grande. They then blockaded the town and cut off its outlet down the Rio Grande. Mexicans crossed over the Rio Grande to drive the Americans away and to make them cease their interference with this Mexican village. Some Americans were killed in the skirmish. Rhodes, on page 87, volume 1, History of the United States, says Mexico was actually goaded on to war. Well, I guess Mexico is getting even with us. What do you think? Mexico had notified to the United States that the annexation of Texas would be treated as a cause of war. Well, I think any country in the world would have said the same thing. The Mexican press made threats, yet there were so many internal quarrels in Mexico that open hostilities could have been avoided if the United States had not taken the position of supporting Texas in her claim to the Rio Grande as her southern boundary. Disregarding the Nueces River as the southern boundary of Texas while a Mexican province. Webster, Clay, Calhoun, Benton, Tyler regarded this war as a result of poor management on the part of President Polk. The Whig Party generally criticized it while the Democrats usually favored it, although as the war continued, both groups were won over to its support. The Massachusetts legislature resolved April 1847 during hostilities that the war had been unconstitutionally commenced by order of the president for the dismemberment of Mexico. What's new? Lincoln also criticized the war while it was in progress. He voted for a resolution offered by Mr. Ashburn in the House declaring that the war had been unnecessarily and unconstitutionally begun. Like most of the shit we get into, like Iraq, like Afghanistan, where is the debate? Where is the vote in Congress and the Senate? There's nothing going on there. There's no debate on anything. The military-industrial complex just does it. And the president just says, well, I guess it's okay. Well, maybe it is a good idea. Everybody's trying to save face. On December 22, 1847, Mr. Lincoln offered the famous Spot Resolution calling upon the president to furnish Congress with information regarding the spot where the hostilities had begun. A pamphlet was sent to Mr. Lincoln in which the author claimed that, in view of all the facts, unquote, the government of the United States had committed no aggression in Mexico. To this, Mr. Lincoln replied, quote, it is a fact that the United States Army, in marching to the Rio Grande, marched into a peaceful settlement and frightened the inhabitants away from their houses and their growing crops. It is a fact that Fort Brown, opposite Matamoros, was built by the Army within a Mexican cotton field, on which at the time Army reached it, a young cotton crop was growing, which crop was wholly destroyed, and the field itself greatly and permanently injured by ditches, embankments, and the like. Unquote. Although Lincoln voted for army supplies, he always criticized the war. For this, Lincoln's patriotism was questioned by Douglas in 1858 during the Lincoln-Douglas debates. General Grant, in his memoirs, Volume 1, page 53, said he considered the Mexican War one of the most unjust ever waged by a stronger against a weaker nation. The direct cost of the conflict, hold on to your seat, was $100 million with a death list of 12,000 white men. Because there was hardly any non-whites in the military at that time. And that's our end of the study of the war with Mexico. So when we talk about it, we're pissed. We don't want race mixing. We don't want these mestizos in here. But you see, when it comes to money and occupation, all that kind of stuff, white leadership completely turns its back on the race issue. They may give it lip service, but that's about it. It's all about money, greed, occupying somebody else's land, just taking it. Like if you would say, well, I'm going to get my gun and go next door and take my neighbor's farm or my neighbor's lot if you're in the city. I'm just going to take it. Why? Because I can. This is why I'm not a right winger, because the right wing will say to a lot of stuff I say, oh my God, this guy is going over the hill. He's not patriotic anymore. He won't stand and salute the flag. He won't pledge allegiance to the flag. He won't do any of that stuff. He despises the central federal government, and he supports and promotes a revolution. Why, this guy is, he's got to be a socialist, a communist, or something like that. a pox on their house. They've got to learn that a lot of the stuff, that's most of the stuff has been done in their name, right-wingers, left-wingers, or what, have been done illegally and criminally by psychopaths, crazy-ass, power-hungry people, flooding our country with niggers just to make money on cotton, when all that land could have been split up into small farms for white families. That's called agrarian reform. But what did they do? They took up thousands of acres of good, rich land all through the South and the West, filled it up with niggers just to make money. Now, you say, and they say the South was racist? If there was any enemy, the biggest enemy in the South was white people that were bringing the niggers in, using slavery and cheap labor. So if you don't understand, and you don't want the South to rise again, not that way. They keep saying we want the South to rise again. We want the South, to working class people, to rise again in the South and tell these big shots that are running the show, get out of the way, because we're going to have an all-white area here. And if we can do it humanely, we're going to do it. If we can indemnify Negroes to go to the Caribbean or go back to Africa, we're going to do it. Otherwise, there's going to be a war here, and unfortunately, a lot of innocent people are going to get hurt, as always, because the people in power put you in a position where you've got nothing left to lose. So anyhow, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. And you'll see here that so far we've talked about three wars in which thousands of white people died. Then you get to the First World War. Oh God, talk about white people dying, millions dying all throughout Europe, all American troops and everything. Now, how does that help the white race? What did that ever do for the white race? What did our involvement in World War I have anything to do with the white race in America? You might say in Europe they got a questionable situation, but not here. We had no reason in the world to send tens of thousands of white young men, working class men, into the jaws of death in Europe. So anyhow, that's my story, like I say, and I'm sticking to it. And if people in the right wing hear it and they want to come our way, that's fine. If they don't, continue down the way of being a slave to the Cheneys and the Bushes and all these other bastards that are insane. Well, I see the boys at Stormfront want to know what I'm up to. This came to me off of the internet. What's going on with Tom Metzger? I've been periodically checking Resist to see if he's posted any new radio shows the past few months. Nothing since June. Anyone know what he's up to? I answered this. I said, all they have to do is ask me, or how about subscribing to the show? Then all you reactionaries will know what to attack me about. In the meantime, stay in the cheap seat nickel section and get stale news. Yeah. Sometimes I have a problem figuring out who are the biggest backbiters, the left wing or the right. Incidentally, we have put a whole bunch of shows into the general archives up until September, so all you, those people out there who want everything free, will know where to go. Well, it looks like I sent out a couple of MP3 files that were not correct this morning. I probably won't be able to find the original either. I must have had my hookup wrong. Sorry about that, boys. One was on Israel, and the NSA is giving everything they've got, or everything Israel asks for, to a special group in Israel that knows everything you're doing, or wants to know everything you're doing. How more blatant can you get? Wow. If I haven't lost this material, I'll copy it and send it out probably tomorrow. It's labeled Israel-NSA, and the other one is Ukraine Billionaire. Well, that's it for now. I'm out of here, 14-5, and remember to shut up. And here's Boxcar Willie to close out the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Roy Acuff is 82 years old this fall. He still gets on the stage every Friday and Saturday night on the Grand Ole Opry. But he was off for 5 months recently, and I told him, I said, sure glad to see you back, King, because I'm getting tired of carrying you. He said, I hope somebody always does the Wabash Cannonball. I said, sir, if I outlive you, I'll always do the Wabash Cannonball.
And thank you, Boxcar Willie.
Song and your train songs, and you do live stream.